All the way from Chicago, wasn't it great having the Hen House Prowlers on our broadcast? From Louisville, Kentucky, this week's Wood Songs kids, Branick and Ashlyn. Ashlyn's 10 years old. Unbelievable. And National Hammer Dulcimer champion Ted Yoder and his group, Sarah and Doug. This amazing, wonderful world of music, and you listen to these folks and you think to myself, I can never play like that. And you listen to a 10-year-old kid like Ashlyn Smith, and you take your guitar and you put it in the case and you hurl it into your closet, and you think, that's just never, never going to happen. And you know what? You're right. It probably won't, but it doesn't matter. That's the beauty of the front porch. That's the beauty of this front porch world of music that Wood Songs presents, and we get to present it all over the world. And aren't we grateful that these kind of artists come on our show and we get to brag on them. Henry Ward Beecher said a long time ago, he said, every artist will dip his brush into his own soul and paint their own nature into their music. That's what the Hen House Prowlers do. You listen to them, they sound like unlike any other bluegrass ensemble like them. And they go all over the world. Ted Yoder plays the hammer dulcimer unlike anybody in the world. They're putting their own nature in this beautiful, wonderful world of music, and that's why we invite you to take this journey with us every week, the Wood Songs voyage into this magnificent ocean of art and music. My name is Michael Jonathan. I'm a folk singer. I am a song farmer. We'll see you next week on the Wood Songs. Good night.
You've been listening to Wood Songs broadcast number 1006. Michael's opening song was Harry Chapin's Cats in the Cradle.
Our chief engineer is Jerome Gulp. Technical assistants are Brian Clossing, Brandon Eves, Isaac May, and Eric Anderson. Our TV and internet broadcast directed by Maria Claridge. Technical director Chris Browning, assisted by Caitlin Farrell.
The Wood Songs crew member of the week is Brian Clossing, and our Wood Songs partner of the week is Pamela Hirschler.
Special support provided by Highbridge Springwater, Nate's Coffee, the staff of the Lyric Theater, and Johnny Carino's in Lexington.
Our show is produced with the support of VisitLex.com, The Mark Guitar Company, Travel Host Magazine, the Bluegrass Hospitality Association, and the Embassy Suites Lexington Green, welcoming visitors from all over the world to Lexington, Kentucky.
Wood Songs and the Wood Songs symbol are registered trademarks of Rachel Aubrey Music. Our show is distributed worldwide by the Wood Songs Radio Network and PRX. Thanks for listening. I'm Josh Bayer.
For Michael Jonathan and the entire Wood Songs crew, this is Dorothy Edwards. We hope you'll join us again next week for the Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour.
Thank you very much for tuning in to this broadcast of the Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour. We get literally about 1,000 emails a week from listeners all over the world. We love to hear from you. We read every single one. My email address is michael@woodsongs.com. Feel free to send me a note. Also, so many artists like to submit their music, and we love to hear from them as well. Our website is full of all kinds of information, including submission information. If you enjoyed this show, go to our archive page. You get to watch it in multi-camera glory. Our website address is woodsongs.com.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Directors of Reservoir Dogs, Desperado, Pulp Fiction, From Dusk Till Dawn, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Kill Bill, and Sin City. Tarantino and Rodriguez are back. Only this time, they're back to back with a double feature that'll tear you in two. First,
I got bit.
Bit by what?
If I told you, you probably wouldn't believe me.
Robert Rodriguez, Planet Terror.
Open that door, will you, baby?
Plus,
fair lady,
your chariot awaits.
Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof.
Do I frighten you? Is it my scar? It's your car.
Two No Holds Barred feature length motion pictures for the price of one. Planet Terror and Death Proof. Only at the Grindhouse.
Zombies. You just heard the ironic, iconic trailer for The Grindhouse, a Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, retro B-movie horror spoof sexploitation double feature, featuring the interlocking films Planet Terror and Death Proof. The Rodriguez part, Planet Terror, revolves around a handful of rogue small-town Americans trying to survive an onslaught of zombie-like creatures. And that's the key phrase today, zombie-like creatures. Zombie-like, zombie-ish, zombie-adjacent, pseudo-zombie, quasi-zombie, infra-zombie, in the general zombie area. That's what we're featuring today on the Cinematic Asylum on CILU 102.7 FM. It's QZ, Quasi-Zombie Apocalypse Day. I'm your relentlessly obscure host, Layman Pascal, and if you're one of the few human survivors left, thanks for tuning in, and don't go outside. You know, I heard a story that the first Jesuit missionaries in the Himalayas had a hard time making converts. They didn't realize the word being used to translate risen and resurrected was the local word for zombies. It took a while before they understood the locals thought they were proselytizing for some kind of radical zombie cult. And who knows, maybe they were. If they come to find your dead body and instead they find you walking around, you do sort of fit the category of the undead. But generally we don't say Jesus was a zombie, and why not? Well, I guess he looks a little too together, if you know what I mean. The skin isn't peeling off, he speaks rather than makes incoherent guttural rumblings. And unless you metaphorically count the victims of institutional Catholic abuse, Jesus doesn't eat people. In fact, it's usually the other way around. So what are zombies? No, I don't care that it's some kind of Haitian voodoo word that might pertain to the use of drugs that temporarily simulate death. That's not what we're talking about when we say zombies. We mean the dead or decaying bodies and brains of humanoid entities that start moving around again after death, or else we mean the infected hordes of people whose bodies and brains have degenerated into a contagious feral cannibalism that might as well be dead. It's a gray area. In fact, it's something like the revenge of the gray area. The undead occupy a curious space between life and death. They're already so far gone they've lost the key attributes of the living, but they're not so far gone that they stop moving around. It's the uncanny effect of watching a chicken running around with its head off, or watching a head running around without a body. The demonic hand crawling across the floor by itself. That surprise moment when the villain you thought was a corpse sits up and grabs at you and mutters something. Netty, netty, they used to say in the East, neither this nor that. Of course, they were talking about the illuminating indifference of transcendental consciousness, but it applies just as well to zombies. Not alive and not dead. Netty, netty, the revenge of the gray area. And I know I said a minute ago I don't care about the occult resurrection or drug-induced pseudo-death of Haitian zombies, since I don't think that's particularly relevant to an analysis of the role of the zombie-like archetype in the collective unconscious. But, on the other hand, maybe it is totally relevant. So here's the Haitian voodoo song Papa Legba from the Talking Heads movie, True Stories.
Thank you.
side. Get your love and desire.
All right, look it. I ain't no anthropologist, but I heard a rumor that early Homo sapiens actually ran into Homo erectus bands in Central Asia for something like a million frigging years. The remains of these characters, these Homo erecti, have some interesting physical attributes. Most of their leg bones apparently have little bumps on them that grow over time on the legs of Olympic runners, so we speculate that these creatures rushed around a lot. We're talking about groups of humanoids who wore ragged, untended skins and probably smelled like dead animals, couldn't really talk, and have been demonstrated to have eaten human beings and rush at you really fast. So imagine you come across a group of humans, but instead of being humans, they rush at you smelling terrible, wearing rags, muttering incoherently, and trying to eat you. Is it possible zombies are a phylogenetic memory of a million years of this kind of thing happening to us? Perhaps. But even if that were the case, we'd have to wonder what kinds of contemporary conditions have reinvoked this latent image from the neurogenetic unconscious. Here's the Black Keys from the soundtrack to Zombieland.
I want it, and you got it. feel about being dead?
I don't know, my neck hurts. You didn't look that cool out there.
Well, at least I died doing what I love, man. You know? Yeah. Lip syncing. Yeah. Love that shit.
A good friend of mine, who I think wasn't wearing pants at the time, once told me that if there's a zombie outbreak, then it's already here. She meant that if you see on the news that zombie-like creatures are attacking people in Miami or Kiev or Singapore, then it's already in your country and you just haven't seen it yet. This is the notion of the viral outbreak, the epidemic or pandemic quality of the zombie, which is interesting to us. Like a lot of diseases, the point at which you notice is pretty much too late to do anything about it. When you notice there's a zombie in the building, there's a good chance it's already grabbing for you and trying to bite you. Zombies are highly communicable. They are, in a sense, the exact opposite of whales. Odds are that when you see a whale, it's usually just out of reach and probably going to get further away. Not all the time, but mostly. When we see whales, we think, neat whales, I wish they were closer, but they're not. By the time most of us notice a pod of dolphins off the starboard bow, they're heading off to play somewhere else. That is the exact opposite of a zombie. When you notice a zombie, they're already too close and getting too closer faster. Somehow, even if they move at a shambling snail's pace, they get too close too faster. That's part of the etiology of the epidemiological tension of the zombie. It's operating like a rapidly spreading infection, even in your consciousness. Your interaction with zombies is isomorphic to the way that the curse or infection spreads through the healthy human and turns it into a zombie in the first place. While vampires lurk in their nocturnal castles and customized coffins and werewolves lie low until the full moon, there's no security of distance, confinement, or calendrical periodicity in the figure of the zombie. It always has the character of the uncontrolled onrushing outbreak. Now, let's pause for a moment and reflect on the nonsense I just said. Did I say periodicity, etiology, epidemiological tension, communicability? I apologize. I just wanted to say that zombies are like totally the opposite of whales, and then my tongue got carried away into a twisted place of hyperlinguistic convulsions. But speaking of outbreaks, here's John Murphy from the 28 Days Later soundtrack.
Thank you.
You just heard In the House in a Heartbeat from John Murphy off the 28 Days Later soundtrack. I'm Layman Pascal, and you're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. This is our all-zombie episode, QZAD, the Quasi-Zombie Apocalypse Day. And let me tell you something, these crooked, shambling bastards are all mouth. They're just a stomach with legs and one oozing, dripping esophageal stalk extended with teeth on the end. You see what I mean? The zombie's whole body breaks down, but it seems to still try to eat. Apparently no other basic biological organ functions survive, except the biting and swallowing is still perked up and ready for service. I never see zombies defecate. Maybe their whole body is defecation, just a bitey mouth and some vague intestines that excrete the chewed flesh back onto the rest of their body instead of out through the excretory membrane. Ugh! Why, though? Why the mouth? These walkers are all biters. That's their raisin of Eritrea, as the French say, and all too often. Of course, vampires and werewolves bite us as well, but it's not as gross. Vampire bites are targeted. Werewolf bites are savage, but naturalistic. Zombies rush to feed on us, but it seems like their dietary practices are wantonly obscene. Maybe the zombie is a collective echo of a culture that shoves nachos, diet soda, discount pepperoni jerky, and recongealed chicken patties down their throats. Is the zombie the echo of our own subconscious awareness that we are disgusting trash eaters, awful consumers, and sewer mouths, subhumanoids who take in politically polarized Facebook links as if they were news, who take in car exhaust as if it was air, who take in pop music as if it was music, and chemically flavored sugar salt sludge as if it was food? Consumers without delicacy. The kingdom of the trash eaters, reflecting itself back to itself in the form of the filthy, inarticulate epidemic of subhumanoid devourers. Devourers, devourers, devourers. I'm telling you, these bastards are all mouth.
You live. Is his wallet leather? Is his wallet fat? For not a year later, it's got you lying on your back. You should have closed your windows and got another dog. You should have chained up all the doors and switched up all the locks. And how many times have I prayed? The angels would speed me away. Dream with the feathers of angels stuck beneath your head. The regulator swinging pendulum. Dream with the feathers of angels stuck beneath your head. The regulator swinging pendulum.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk in Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
As the sun sets, the earth is still, yet from the graves of rumble bills. From their crypts and from the dark, to every house and trailer park, shadows creep across the plains. As the dead awake and lust for brains, maggots feast on rotting flesh. Your hood is filled with death's foul stench.
I'm surprised to find the dead are walking around. Hell must be full. They're back in action, hungry for brains. They seek some satisfaction. We must not fear what we do not get. Like acid rain or laser jets. But good advice, see guns and or hammers. Lots of wood and silky pajamas. Shoot them in the brains if you want to live. Shoot them in the brain. If you want to survive them eating your flesh, I suggest you shoot them in the brains. You zombie killers. You zombie killers. Not as basic like Buffy, there can only be one. You must gather your strength. Shooting them can be quite fun. Take note, they don't run well, and they'd rather be back in their homeland of hell. The bloody ones shoot at first, the smell alone ain't worth the hurt. No drama here, just straight up survival. The damned are back seeking beatbox revival. Shoot them in the brains if you want to live. Shoot them in the brain.
lines to live, but never enough to eat. Bullets by the hundreds, we aim for the heart, but if you dot the shot right, you smart, you watch zombie heads explode. Shock, lock, and load.
Y'all can run, but you can't hide. Just do your best to stay alive. Now I'm not Vincent, and this ain't thrilling. You've just become a zombie killer.
If you want to survive and eat in your flesh, I suggest you shoot them in the brains. You zombie killers.
Ah, zombie killer.
You're back with Layman Pascal in the Cinematic Asylum on QZAD, Quasi-Zombie Apocalypse Day, here on CILU 102.7 FM. You just heard Leslie and the Lies with Zombie Killer Revisited. You've got to shoot them in the brains. You do. You've got to. Shotgun, crossbow, samurai sword, pointy stick, whatever. The traditional symbolic weak spot of the zombie is the brain. Either the core of the brain or often the center of the forehead. When we consider this in tandem with their lack of articulate speech, their lack of finesse, their lack of sympathy, we may not be unjustified in saying these subhumanoids are weak in their prefrontal cortex area. It's almost as if shooting them in the brains is the ritual duplication of the very problem from which they are already suffering. The old but not entirely outdated idea of neuroanthropologists was that we have an old reptile brain wrapped inside a mammal brain wrapped inside a monkey brain with a ridiculously large and uniquely human membrane wrapped around the upper front, jutting forward into logic, abstract pattern formation, joke-getting, compassion, conscious relationships, intentional awareness, all that sort of thing. The uniquely human executive angelic cortex. And yes, other animals have a little bit of prefrontal cortex, but nothing like the size and complexity that we do proportionally. And these are the areas of the brain called angel lobes and executive cortex because they get stronger and richer as we meditate, undertake voluntary tasks, practice regulating our emotions, exercise coordination, and undertake intentional focus and pleasurable goal-seeking exercises. It's obvious that zombies have a problem in this area. You've got to shoot them in the brains. The brain needs to be put down like a horse with a broken leg in the olden days. How did they get into this situation? Why do they have such a frontal cortex weakness? Hard to say. Could be a good sign, though. Could mean that so many people in our current culture are getting such rich developmental experience that their own prefrontal cortices are growing and noting by comparison the sluggish, ill-adept, inarticulate, unfun, and unconscious patterning of the people around them. It may be that the more people perceiving more other people as subhuman and clumsy means that there are, in fact, more people in position to make those perceptions. Larger numbers of more precise observers who observe, obviously, hordes of increasingly imprecise humanoids with some vaguely defined brain limitation. This is Zombie as portent of optimism.
How often can you say you've been changed? Really changed by a party?
Thank you. Yeah!
For the horse. That
was Dead Boy and the Elephant Men with the introduction to the iZombie Show, followed by the Blue Wrath from Never Odd or Even off the Shaun of the Dead soundtrack.
Thank you.
Thank you for the horse.
Followed by a little piece from Canada's most famous film composer, Howard Shore, with some of his trademarked orchestral swelling and jangly tones for the 2000 horror film Cell. Shore did not, however, do the soundtrack for the 2016 horror film Cell, based on the Stephen King novel Cell. And I know it gets hard trying to make a good film out of a good book, but Cell is just one in a long line of barely tolerable and uninspiring movie versions of very interesting Stephen King novels. Cell is a revenge tale for anyone who's had to overhear other people on their cell phones and just wished something would shut them up. In this story, an unknown electromagnetic information pulse penetrates the ears and sinks down into the soft, wet brain cores of anyone who happens to be on their mobile phones at that moment. It destroys them, unwrangles their brains, deprives them of speech and coherent thought, and leaves them as shambling flocks of contagious cannibal munchers roaming the countryside, following any noises heard in the night and eager to get their mouths on human parts. Eventually, and creepily, these things start getting together and organizing into more complex patterns as if there were some hidden command code lodged inside them from the moment the signal entered. This idea of zombification through words, symbols, and electronic signals is an intriguing one to me. Reminds me of the 2008 Canadian horror film Pontypool, in which words communicated through electronic devices and over the radio waves drive people insane. They get so worked up by disturbing or inflammatory language coming over the public airwaves, it turns people into feral, cannibalistic degenerates barely living in a decadent subhuman condition and attacking other people without rhyme or reason. Sound familiar? Of course, this horse is a thinly veiled satire of what really goes on in our world. From so-called obscene language to racial epithets to grammar police to any currently charged word or category that arouses our ire, the public use of ostensibly wrong language is likely to set small clusters of people into a subhuman attack mode where they roam the culture muttering incoherently and looking for someone to bite. Electrolinguistic zombification. That's a mouthful, but just take a look at Twitter feeds or YouTube comments and tell me it's not happening. Let's face it, we live inside a hyper-semantic environment. Our brains might be evolutionarily well adapted to handle a few carved inscriptions on the outer wall of a pyramid or a royal edict or two, but we're hardly designed to receive the unending digital torrent of words, pictures, and symbols that gush toward us ceaselessly. There's no way you could possibly get on top of the current state of actual knowledge, let alone tease it apart from fake and misleading pseudo-facts, propaganda, outrage, and marketing. Social media and electric media in general provide so many potentially significant symbols and situations that our brains go crazy. We try to treat the incoming data the way we would like to treat meaningful information, but you can't read all those articles, watch all those videos, decipher all those posts, verify all those images yourself. You can't even figure out if this form or that form of upset is valid. One way or another, you've got to stop taking the internet seriously. And not just the internet. TV, phones, games. It ain't necessarily news just because people are talking about it. Zombie outbreaks arise when people receive some kind of digital symbol that blows their freaking mind, frustrates them, confuses them, and turns them into shambling attackers. From the French-Canadian horror film Les Affamés, or Ravenous, here's Peter Henry Phillips with Dreamcatcher.
Dream catcher, lost halfway into flight. Found a dream catcher, alone to catch things and learn to fly. Now the fighting hard. For my dream, for my home. For my baby, sweet baby. Found a dream catcher. I'm gonna catch all the slaves and fly. Someday,
And in conclusion, zombies are feral, contagious, relentless, and ravenous humanoid flocks characterized by a loss of body structure, higher mental faculties, speech, and regenerative energy. Some are fast and some are slow. Some are brought back partially decomposed from beyond the grave, while others are broken down by illness, toxins, or sustained apocalyptic savagery. They're nostalgic in the sense that they're vestigial members of individual... They're nostalgic in the sense that they may be vestigial memories of individual human lives or of a functional society that's been left behind. I'm Layman Pascal. This is the Cinematic Asylum's QZAD, Quasi-Zombie Apocalypse Day, and you've been listening to CILU 102.7 FM.
Thank you for the horse. 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 Thank you for the horse.